Good evening, everybody. This is Lyle Vann with the 11 o'clock report from the NBC Newsroom, brought to you by Bond Clothes. In the headlines tonight, a huge Superfort Armada has paid a 4th of July visit to Japan. Then the voice of NBC's Roy Porter telling us how American troops entered Berlin. Harry Hopkins has resigned as special advisor to the president. I'll be back with tonight's full news report. Now here's Bob Stanton with a message to the men from Bond Clothes.
B.C., gentlemen, and this time I don't mean a period in history, because these two letters also stand for Bond Clothes. And say, I guess you might call Bond Clothes a history-making setup at that, because for 10 years now, more men have worn Bond Clothes than any other clothes in America. Yes, the Bond name has been on top for a long time, and still is, as a matter of fact. And little wonder, because Bond's history has been built on the basis of clothes of the better sort for less. That runs the whole gamut of quality, too. Superior pure wool fabrics, expert needlework, and flawless fit. Yes, it'll pay you handsomely next time you need a new suit to make Bond, the nation's number one tailor, your tailor. And you can do it for very little money, too. From $28 to $40.75. There's a Bond store in Manhattan on 42nd Street, opposite the Grand Central Terminal. Now, here's Lyle Vann with the news.
It was already the 4th of July in Japan when nearly 500 American Superforts appeared overhead above industrial targets on Honshu and Shikoku Islands, appeared overhead carrying 3,000 tons of unfriendly fireworks for the enemy down below. Thus began Independence Day for the fighting crews of our giant bombers carrying the aerial offensive against the Mikado's imperial nest to a new high. War industries were the targets in this third all-out attack in 3 days. There's no such thing as Independence Day in Japan, you know. Meanwhile, the new invasion of Borneo at Balikpapan is going ahead, turning enemy airfields near the oil port into fighter bases for Allied aircraft, now near enough to attack Java, the heart of the Dutch East Indies. The Australian commander in the Balikpapan area says the campaign already is won strategically. Aussie troops are pressing northward, headed for the last Borneo oil field still in enemy hands. And over on Asia's mainland, victory is the underlying theme of the communiques issued by the Chinese High Command. Chungking reports that Chinese forces have dented the east flank of Japan's important Hong Kong-Hankow corridor when they captured the highway center of Sinfeng. Meanwhile, Tokyo is grinding out its usual propaganda broadcasts, declares that new Japanese fighter planes now being manufactured underground will soon take to the air to meet the B-29 menace. Then another broadcast says that the food situation is growing worse, tells the people to get set for a 10% cut in food rations until the fall harvest. Today, American occupation troops rolled into Berlin, and among the American newsmen in the vanguard of the triumphal march was NBC's Roy Porter, who broadcast the story of the entry into the German capital earlier tonight. It was transcribed then for rebroadcast now, so here is Roy Porter with the story of Berlin today.
This is Roy Porter in Berlin. This battered former capital of Germany is occupied and well occupied tonight by armed forces of three nations, Russia, America, and Britain. By lengthy negotiation and formal agreement with the Soviets, American and British forces began to move into their separate zones today. And not the smallest of the units were two large groups of war correspondents who rode almost at the head of the long convoys which crossed the Elbe River for the first time officially since the Nazi surrender. It was a complicated procedure, made so primarily by Soviet outposts, damaged bridges, and mud. Brigadier General John Collier of Dallas, commanding general of the 2nd Armored Division, led the parade. He and the prince managed to get through after a long trip in the rain. The 2nd Armored itself was not so lucky. They sent some of their lighter vehicles in the line all right, but when the heavy tanks began to hit one of the temporary bridges over the Mulde River, the timbers began to creak and the structure began to sway. And the tanks are still waiting far behind. But according to plan, they've got to be here tomorrow, because the Americans are going to celebrate the 4th of July in Berlin with a flag-raising ceremony at the old Adolf Hitler Barracks, the school for Nazi military, which before 1933 was known as the Kaiser Wilhelm Cadet School. when the American flag flies over those bomb-shattered buildings tomorrow, it will signal the formal occupation of one zone in Berlin by American troops. It may be that General Bradley will be here for the ceremony, and if he is, Marshal Zhukov has promised to come too. If he can't make it, Major General Floyd Parks, commanding officer of the 1st Airborne Army, will officiate, and another Russian general will fill Zhukov's place. There'll be only 100 American soldiers and 100 Russian soldiers participating in the actual ceremony. And a 48-gun salute will finish off our 4th of July in Berlin. The British are planning to hold a review in their part of the city, too. And these two ceremonies will be the start of a whole series of celebrations while the formal occupations are established. Some French troops are expected soon to take over a newly defined zone in the eastern section. But the plans haven't gone very far yet. That will make three principal zones and one smaller one, splitting Berlin into sectors or concessions and beginning the first Allied control of the heart of defeated Nazi Germany. Now let me tell you a little about how this whole plan is going to work. Major General Parks of the 1st Airborne Army has also become the top-ranking officer of the Berlin District Command. As such, he will represent the occupying force set up early last month by General Eisenhower, Marshal Zhukov, and Field Marshal Montgomery. In other words, General Parks is the man with the big stick for the Allied Control Council. And in a few days, one of General Parks' units, the 2nd Armored, which, among other things, invaded Holland and crossed the Rhine, will have moved in about 16,000 men and about 4,000 vehicles of all kinds. All of these troops will be under General Collier's order, because that general is the man who wields the big stick for the boss. This will be a joint American-British force. The British are going to send more troops in later. And, of course, the Russians are maintaining their own garrison. The British general, incidentally, on the spot, will be General L.O. Rhine. And he'll have with him his famous division of desert rats, the people who defeated Rommel in Africa. And so, you see, it's going to be quite a famous outfit all around. Now, meanwhile, the Russians are cooperating for all their worth and to the best of their ability. And they are moving a lot of their troops westward into such areas as Halle and Weimar and others where the Americans have held temporary control up to now. A lot of them even got in our way today, and parts of our convoy were delayed a long time. But it was all settled very peacefully. There was much saluting,
I beg your pardon.
And if you want to know the real truth, the Russians seemed very happy to see us. This is Roy Porter in Berlin, returning you to the NBC newsroom in New York.
That was a transcribed broadcast made earlier tonight by NBC's Roy Porter, now in Berlin. This has been a full day up on Capitol Hill, plenty of activity bearing on America's place in the post-war world. Harry Hopkins, the man who has been confidential advisor and wartime emissary for two presidents, resigned today, stepped out of public life because of poor health. President Truman accepted the Hopkins resignation in a letter, expressed regret at the resignation, praised Hopkins for the service he has given to his country. Mr. Truman had been planning for Hopkins to go with him to the coming Big Three meeting set for later this month, but the White House said that Joseph Davies will attend the conference after first going on a second special mission to London for President Truman. Late this afternoon, the Senate Banking Committee acted on the Bretton Woods Monetary Plan, voted 14-4 its approval of the legislation enabling the United States to participate in the stabilization structure. Four Republican senators voted against the plan, Taft, Thomas, Butler, and Milliken, and three Republicans voted with 11 Democrats for the plan. Meanwhile, in the Senate today, GOP Senator Bushfield leveled one of the first full-fledged attacks against the charter. Bushfield declared that the charter has at least six flaws which should be corrected before it is ratified. The GOP senator said he was in a position where he would have to support the charter, yet he served notice that he would seek reservations, amendments, when the treaty comes before the Senate for ratification, possibly late this month. On the White House terrace, in bright sunlight today, James Burns took the oath as the new Secretary of State, then made a plea for worldwide tolerance. Burns was attended by President Truman, and the outgoing Secretary of State, Edward R. Stettinius, was sworn in before an applauding throng of the nation's highest officials. On the home front, President Truman has ordered most government agencies to cut their work week to 44 hours, effective immediately. Up to now, all government agencies have maintained a 48-hour, six-day week throughout the war. And out at Akron, Ohio, government seizure, the strike-paralyzed Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company plants moved a step nearer today when the National War Labor Board turned the dispute over to economic stabilizer William H. Davis. Meanwhile, at the also strike-bound Firestone plants, more than 16,000 workers refused to comply with a WLB back-to-work order, said they would not return under present conditions. And on the financial front here at home, the Federal Reserve Board put the brakes on the stock market, acted to cut down on speculation. Effective the day after tomorrow, margin requirements will be raised from 50 to 75%. The delivery men of New York's newspapers are still on strike, the dispute a deadlock. However, the union agreed today to appear at a show cause hearing before the War Labor Board in Washington tomorrow. Yesterday, the WLB sent a directive to the union ordering it to end the strike or appear at the hearing. So today, while the strike is continuing, union leaders announced they will have their attorneys at the hearing. Thus, the situation remains pretty much as it has been since last Saturday night. I'll be back in a moment with more items in the weather report. Now, here's a message to the men from Bon Clothes.
Well, variety is the spice of foot comfort during the summer. So, of course, you need shoes to wear around the house and garden evenings and weekends. Yes, and you need some for the beach and the golf course, too. But woe is you. Nary a single valid shoe coupon in any of the family's ration book. A tough situation? Mm-mm, not by a long shot, sir. Just stop by at Bond's. They're practically headquarters in town for ration-free shoes. You'll get a kick out of their dandy selection. Swell slack shoes and sandals at just $2.95. Comfortable camp moccasins for $2.45. And yes, some of your favorite Mexican hand-woven huaraches. Bond priced at just $3.95. Also swell pigskin leather strapped sandals with sturdy brown rubber soles at $2.95. No, sir, no ration coupon necessary. And, oh, man, are those words sounding sweet to your ears. Well, why not stop by at Bond's and outfit your feet for a summer chuck full of easy comfort? There are 12 large Bond stores conveniently located in the metropolitan area. One of them is Bond's huge showplace at Broadway and 45th Street, which remains open every evening until 9. Now here's Lyle Vann again
with the Major League Baseball scores. In the National League, the Cubs overwhelmed the Braves 24-2. Pittsburgh defeated Philadelphia 10-3. In night games, Brooklyn was defeated by Cincinnati 5-1, and the New York Giants nosed out the Cards 3-2. In the American League, Boston shut out Detroit 4-0, and in night games, final score, New York Yankees 2, Cleveland 5, Washington 7, Chicago nothing in the fourth inning, and Philadelphia St. Louis 0-0 in the fourth inning. Well, tomorrow is the 4th of July. As a matter of fact, this year's Independence Day will be here before another hour has passed. President Truman has set the theme for this wartime 4th, has issued a statement calling on the nation to honor the creed of liberty, stresses that all Americans should honor the men and women of the armed forces who are carrying this creed with them throughout the world. Out on Okinawa, one of our most famous soldiers, General Joseph Stilwell, has done just that, honored his men, told them in a broadcast carried over the island hookup that he wanted to take his battered old campaign hat off to them in an Independence Day salute. Yes, another 4th of July is almost here, and the weatherman says it's going to be just about the best it can be as far as atmosphere is concerned. The forecast is for sunny and pleasant in New York City and vicinity, with the highest temperature around 85 degrees. At the moment, it's 74. And that's the 11 o'clock report from the NBC Newsroom. It's now exactly 16 seconds past 11:14, and this is Lyle Vann speaking for Bond Clothes, inviting you to be with us tomorrow and every night at 11. So good night until tomorrow night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.